Let's talk about Twin Peaks. I posted, Will, a couple of interviews with this guy, Jan Dyer. I just heard about him a week or two ago, but finally heard some of his stuff. And he seems to be the most successful commentator. His book is appreciated. And Will said some things about him. But what is missing is the McLuhan angle. I think Lynch is a closet McLuhanite. And so the mysterious part for people, they might become familiar with all the Freemasonic or Rosicrucian or Crowleyan historical Tibetan Buddhism stuff. Other religions and secret society stuff. But they don't know the McLuhan point, which is what Ion wrote in on. And so they cannot make the claim it's about them or what they know, and I can. Let's see. So, Will, what did you, without going into Jan Dyer yet, what did you want to point out about this series?
Well, where to begin? Let's see. I feel like you. When did you go on leave? Was that 6 weeks ago or something?
Yeah, 6 weeks ago. Yep.
So you guys talked about it up until the fifth episode?
Yeah. Well, I left on. If I look in my inventory. We didn't do a show. We left on June 12th, which is a Monday, so we didn't do the 13th, and I don't know. We might have done the 6th. Yeah, maybe. And it hadn't started yet. I'm pretty sure.
You talked about the first four episodes for sure.
It's been 11 episodes. So, okay. I talked about it. I must have talked about it.
We walked through the second episode. We had it on video, and you paused it, and you described it.
Oh, yeah. So he started around May 21st, didn't he? Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, they did four episodes at once, and then there's another episode after that.
And so while I was away, I watched everything as they came out, and, you know, by episode 9, I'd had enough, and I'm taking a Lynch to court. He's stealing Iandam stuff so blatantly, not what everybody thinks he's stealing. They see, we're not talking about the theosophical stuff that people see in it. We're talking about blatant, the meaning of Ion, slightly distorted. And Ion's a new meaning. Ion's not theosophical. So that was after episode 10, I guess. And then we just did episode 11, which...
Last time you talked about it, you were saying that when you're in Europe, you met that girl who said that you were like, I think she's Polish, and that you were like Dr. Jacoby, right?
Yeah, that was in August 2014. The Polish girl who had just seen, 22-year-old who had just seen Twin Peaks maybe 2 years before that and became a real devotee of it, she and her friend. And now she was with a semi-cult that offered employment in London. It was run like a cult. I don't know what kind of cult it was, but when I met her 6 weeks before that, she liked the situation. But then 6 weeks later, she was bitter about the employer and that. And so she became quite ironic. But she immediately called me pretty quickly once we found out we could both talk about Twin Peaks. She thought I was Dr. Jacoby, maybe because of the Hawaiian aspect. I don't know what on me.
And then so after you said that before the hiatus, the very next episode showed him doing the podcast.
Yes. Are you saying? I brought that up since May 21st.
You brought it up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then it turned into the next episode. Yeah, that's where it's like he total incredible down to the minute synchronicity or xenochrony. You know, a Bob Marshall character with and then the second time they showed him in episode 11, I think he's doing the health thing. You know,
Yeah,
you could really match that. He was making, he was both me and Carolyn, or Bob Marshall and Carolyn. Or, I don't see him as and the Bob Dobbs. That's more of a multi-leveled thing going on. I'm most of the characters now in the series. Bob Dobbs contains most of them. But it's pretty incredible the way Jacoby ends up on the radio. And he's got whack job fucking fans like I do, like the blindfolded woman, right? She's his main devoted fan, just like Gene Shermer or somebody. Right, Gene? Or someone like that. Have no community, no local community, and to live on the radio. Or share. Yeah, okay, so what would you say about it? Okay, that was nice. That was good.
Yeah. And then, I mean, so, like, interesting things that have been happening are the Woodsman, right, in episode 8.
Yes.
See the Woodsman.
Okay, hold on. Now, Brent, somebody, it looks like Brent, if you're in the kitchen banging around, put yourself on mute. It's coming through quite loud. Okay.
Bob, I'm drinking water. Is it the water I'm drinking, or?
Yeah,
it's
whatever you put the cup down, it echoes through the whole show.
but Bob, it's my magnesium. Does that make it okay? Or?
That's good.
It's okay.
Okay. Can you put yourself on mute until you have something to say?
I got you.
If you want to say. But, you know, Will's going to dominate for a bit here, so we're going to put you on mute so you can drink all you want and bang the cup, okay? All right, so muted.
Brent will now learn the art of muting, Bob.
Who is? Who's into the art of muting?
Well, I listened to White Youth and, you know, and Brent's story about being mentored to socialize. Well, now here on this show, he'll learn the art of muting.
Yes, this is more the TV body, you know, analog media. It's interaction. We're not looking at the fusing of imagery that you get on the chip body, you know, clicking around. It's a bit slower. So, yes, Brent now has to learn how to act in the TV body, analog media body. So, Will, yes.
So the Woodsman, what struck me about that was the at the end of Inland Empire, there's the shot where during the dance routine at the very end of it, there's a guy sawing a log. Do you remember that?
Yes. Yeah, and there was a woodsman earlier in Inland. Remember he'd appear around the corner of a restaurant? They'd bump into
that's in Mulholland Drive, and that wasn't necessarily a woodsman. That was just like a weird dark figure.
Right. So you're saying there the Inland Empire ended with some interesting phrase, sweet. Everybody was going, sweet, sweet.
And they're dancing to the Locomotion or something, one of those songs.
Yeah.
And the prostitutes are there, and it's, like, really kind of heartwarming.
Right. Then there's a guy sawing?
There's a guy. He's sawing a log. And at the time, I had just seen the Industrial Symphony Number 1, which was done around the same time as Twin Peaks with Angela Badalamenti and David Lynch. And there's a stage show in Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah? It's put on by them?
Yeah. And in that, the character, the man from that place, the little guy, he signed a log in that place.
Are you saying the guy who plays the dwarf?
Yeah, the dwarf, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
he's sawing a log in the play.
Well, that's pretty interesting.
Right?
And then the log lady.
The log lady too. But so the two log scenarios or like images, they always kind of stuck with me. And then seeing in the show that they're the woodsmen, and that they were called that, I looked back and Mike was called the woodsman. Yeah, Mike's his name. He was called the woodsman in the stage play. And the other guy I don't think was called anything.
Yeah, you're saying an actor named Mike Suzette? What did you say?
No, Mike's his name. Mike is his name, the dwarf.
Oh, I thought there's Mike the One-Armed Man, and the dwarf is called Mike too?
The dwarf in real life is called Mike.
Oh, it's his real name. Okay, so he played, what did he do?
He played the woodsman in the play.
Oh.
Right, and there's a woodsman in Inland Empire, and then there's the woodsman now in the show.
Right. And, okay, go ahead.
And no one's really put that together. That's, like, I think an important detail.
Well, this Jan Dyer guy sees the woodsman, comes right out of some theosophical or Crowley or some kind of literature. You know, he's able to cite the giant and all these characters as coming from particular books.
Right.
He's pretty good at that. And the woodsman, he had it identified, but he didn't mention what you, he doesn't talk about the Brooklyn play and the stuff I've done, but he is aware of references to movies and the quoting from movies, a lot of stuff. He's quite
a he's pretty good at reading stuff on Facebook and quoting it back.
Right. But
Dave McGowan's books.
He reads them? Or is that what you just said?
Yeah.
He reads
in that interview. He's like, well, in Dave McGowan's book, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
He's a Dave McGowan fan.
All right. So the what it is, he says he's fascinated with how it's going to turn out and all that. They don't know that this is Lynch's propaganda celebrating Iandom and the coming of Iandom. You know, they don't know that for me, it's boring. It's not exciting, the show. It's I'm actually not waiting for Cooper to unfold and get consciousness. I don't care. And I think Lynch is lazy. He's just filling up fucking space with this. Whatever's going to solve Cooper's problem will be Ionic. That's what we know. So we'll see how he do it. And what I think was amazing is the opening scene of the first episode is Coop talking to Ion or the Giant. I mean, you have Cooper in season two getting possessed by Bob. So that's Bob Marshall being taken over by Bob Dobbs, or Bob Dobbs replacing him on CKLN. And that's where it left us. And then 25 years later, Bob Dobbs connects with Ion, and Lynch caught up with that. And he's expressing the meaning of Iandom, which has been on the air for 9 years. And that's what we're seeing in episode three. It's Bob Dobbs 25 years later, and begins with talking Ion. And then it just literally unfolded everything with after images like Dr. Jacoby doing Bob Marshall or Carolyn. And it just piles on all the stuff that led to Ion. We want to see how he's going to do Ion. Is he going to just end up to be the Android meme reverse image of Ion? What the fuck is that? Is that you outside?
That's a saw across the L.A. River.
Oh, okay, maybe you should go back inside. You're not that
much improved. Yeah, I'm walking away from it.
And your sound. So it's been striking how literally the whole thing is talking about how Ion came to be, but Lynch may not be too good at presenting Ion, actually. I mean, remember in the little leaflet that comes out of the little pipe that's in Briggs' chair, that has our first logo for howionic.com on it. You know, the two little triangles, the two little twin peaks. And there's all kinds of other little details. And in talking about the change in 1945, that's the electric environment. And so reviewing with this Jen Dyer stuff last night, he's trying to figure out what it means that Lynch is Cooper is coming through the electrical sockets. It's a crude way of showing that people become discarded on the telephone, that they're traveling through the wires, and they're actually not going anywhere, but they're in touch with everything. So he's got a literal McLuhan point there. And so ultimately the unique idea that Ion gives us is that the guff was melted away by the electric environment. And that's what they're trying to show, Lynch is trying to show here, the electrical effect.
Right, right.
And that's what nobody sees. They don't know that, to say that yet.
Right, well, and that's the problem, like with Dyer and all that, they're just reading the shit on Facebook and then they're saying it back here.
Yeah.
They aren't going deeper than that.
Yeah, they're not seeing that Ion is a definite all this change that happened in 1945 is a prefiguring, and the reason why Ion showed up, and Ion has said they were able to manifest because the computer landscape or the chip body landscape was so vast, human authorities, religionists, and moral policemen couldn't control it. So Ion didn't have to stay within the laws of being non-physical, the traditional religious laws. So it said, I can go forward and create the environment of non-physical that people die into, could go forth to create in this new electronic effect. And Lynch's imagery is very accurate in showing that. We don't know if he means that, But it's a nice, cheap way of showing the electric effect. It's in his logo. It's in everything.
Yeah, no, I think he definitely means it, because when I was watching it, I was thinking about your analysis back during the original series and talking about how the, like, the pattern on the floor looked like electricity.
Yeah.
The Black Lodge. And then I remember Dublin was talking about, it led to, like, Dublin talking about the sun being like a loose cable and energy flowing out of it and all this stuff. But yeah, so when I was watching the new series, it was like, holy shit, he's just taking it even further by, like, actually traveling through electrical lines.
Right. And another point there is you're talking about in the first series. What was your first point before Dublin?
Oh,
wavy lines.
Yeah, wavy lines, and then
I remember
barking and all the flickering.
Yeah,
and being electricity.
When he was in, he was interviewed in 1986-87 in Vanity Fair or something. You know, after Blue Velvet, and he's talking about how he made paintings of the electric baby. That was his phrase.
Yeah,
that's
the
electric
thing,
baby. Yeah, and that is really a way of talking about new man, new humans, new situation. New kids being affected by media, electric media. Electric baby is very key. So let's see. So a lot of so Mark Frost writes the book on the secret history of Twin Peaks, and he's the expert on theosophy and talks about that. But it's almost like and they like to say it's a satire on theosophy, but I don't think Mark Frost knows what Lynch knows about the electric effect.
And that could be true.
Yeah. And Lynch is more detached. He's more the more detached guy, and it's like beyond satire. That's the best that someone could come up with after they get familiar with every, all the occult parts of it. But I think Lynch is sitting there from a knowing position. Now, in the one of these commentaries, I didn't know this. I've seen some of these interviews with Lynch, but he says, to watch a movie on a cell phone is ridiculous. Get real. Get off the fucking cell phone if you're going to watch a movie. Like, he totally was pissed off. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Like, he's having a bit of – he could be a bit of a – having an identity crisis, and in the end saying that electricity is a demon force. And Ion would not say that. But Lynch, in the end, if he's pissed off – that's what he's showing, that the kids are getting stupider and stupider, like those two girls in the Bang Bang Cafe, you know, stoned out and brains going away. He's doing the negative side of McLuhan's warning, and that would make the whole thing make sense. And, of course, McLuhan said tribalism and the occult will come back, so he's showing the occult levels that's happening to the people. It's so literally McLuhan, a conventional understanding, well, good understanding of McLuhan, that, of course, you don't understand McLuhan, you don't get it. And so here's Twin Peaks happening, and then finally Google Doodle does the 106th birthday of McLuhan, which is Roxy Point. Oh, why didn't they do it last year? Why didn't they do it 3 years ago? Why right now when we're doing the new Coach House and when Twin Peaks is out? They go together,
right.
Twin Peaks and the third season. Yeah, go ahead. You can say another part.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah, they could during the centennial, right? Which is a few years ago.
Yes.
The
yeah.
So yeah, I'd say that, like, the theosophy part, it also kind of goes into the Olympia, you know, what's it called, the cosmic awareness world too.
Right. Oh yeah. That's the other big point. Yeah. We go
and
ahead.
Then, like,
which
is. You're saying that theosophy isn't, like, the big deal to the show, and then and you also think, like, cosmic awareness isn't as legit as Ion, right?
Right.
So
and then there's the evergreens, but I don't know if you know this. On July 11th, Dave Worster died.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And what episode is that? If last Sunday was the 23rd, and that was 11, so the 16th was... The night he died after the cosmic one, episode 8, I think.
Holy shit!
That is all about his stuff. That episode.
Huh.
Let me see. The 9th. He dies on the 11th, and that would be 8, and then the 16th would be 9, and the 23rd would be 10. No, that's we've done 11, haven't we? So he died after 9.
Yeah.
He died after, and 9 is good. 8 and 9 go together. They're quite revelatory. So, and you want to have, in the old way, you want to have 9 steps, you know, before you redo the 10th and 11th. But he died at the right time. He couldn't take the transition to Iodum that Lynch is pointing to.
The
Here's the evergreens. Now here's the evergreen. This is why when you listen to the Red Ice guy interview Jan Dyer, it's pretty interesting because Lynch is talking their world that they're interested in, the occult world, the MKUltra world, all the stuff that's part of the counterculture, and they're befuddled. They're trying to figure out, is this part of a larger mind control operation put out by Hollywood? You know, when they get paranoid like Dave McGowan or something. And they are also fascinated by it. So the knowledgeable Jan Dyer says the big issue in season 3 is the Blue Rose factor. Now, they were wondering if David Lynch and Mark Frost knew government people, knew what was going on, and trying to leak it out. Just like Zappa and Ike Willis talk about the AIDS thing for Thinkfish that they were informed on in the 80s. Okay, so I can say it's about me because I am the only guy in the fucking world know that the CIA, off the record, interviewed the Evergreens. And only if you're present. When you're present, you can hear Ellie use the word Blue Rose to trigger Mike's final shifting into having his body ready for the Evergreens. There's a whole process. They have to reduce the body temperature, and then when he, at the end of the session, they have to bring him out. And there's, you might have heard it, Dave Neufeld quoted the other day that all is well with the form. he was talking about something, and he just ended, all is well with the form. And I had to point out to everybody, Dave Neufeld's quoting the end of a Michael Blake Reed channeling Evergreen session when the Evergreens have successfully brought Michael back to normal and he can wake up. But the beginning part, the triggering is Blue Rose. So one person in the world, first of all, Mike and Ellie, never told anybody about the State Department coming, and because Ellie was an American citizen, she kind of had to obey them. They said, you will not tape this session. And all sessions were taped, but they capitulated when the government came around. And they came around regularly. And I say the whole Stanford, forget some of those names now, Ingo Swann and those guys, the remote viewers, that was the distraction put out in that book in 1995 to get people off of the Stanford route to look for the shit, but it was actually the Evergreens, and the Evergreens were good enough that the government could use. So the key word was Blue Rose. So here it is. Blue Rose is a key term in this series, and it happened back in Fire Walk With Me, the movie. But that's why Jan Dyer and the Red Ice guy, what's his name, Henrik something? That they say, geez, maybe, you know, they don't know how close they are when they're wondering, did Lynch talk to some government people and they told them about Blue Rose? Oh, they told them about the Evergreens and that the keyword was Blue Rose, you know? So yeah. I am the guy in the position of knowing, the only one to know that, because Mike and Ellie trusted me and told me, and I never told anybody till Mike died. And I talked about this at the memorial for Michael Blake Reed, March, I think it was February 23rd, 2013. That was before I met you down in San Francisco. We went and interviewed Bob Carr. It was that same trip. So in the memorial, because his family and daughters were there, I told them that story about how important Michael was for the government. And didn't know if I was allowed to or not, but I did it, at least his children to know, who were all adults at that point. And they thanked me after. They didn't know how important Michael was. They just said normal doubting Michael or thought he was a nut, who knows, different things. But I helped them appreciate Michael. So when Ellie released the video of the testimonials by everybody, including George Reynolds, They deleted my thing was like 3 minutes. You know, I talked for 20 minutes or something, and they only let 3 minutes. And they deleted that whole CIA stuff. So Ellie, I guess, as an American, was still concerned. So she didn't want that out in the public.
Right. Well, yeah,
I had said. But so it is, if Lynch knows, maybe Lynch used the Evergreen for fuck's sake. Maybe
well,
he went so, to it.
Here's something else. Or Frost. I bet you it'd be Frost. Frost didn't do Firewalk with me, did he?
Wait, it's hard to make out what you're saying. Say it again.
Frost did not work on Firewalk with me, is that true?
What did he, I don't know what you're saying he worked on.
I think it would be Frost, but actually I think Frost did not do Firewalk with me. That was just.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I could Google that right now, see who produced it. Let's see. Okay, while I'm doing that, does anybody else have anything to say in response to what Will's saying?
Well, I've got one more thing to say.
Okay, go ahead.
So the last thing that, because I got to get back into work.
Okay.
The last thing that I want to say is that years ago, during the original series, someone called in and they brought up that OWL stands for Order of the White Lion.
The White Lion.
Order of the White Lion is OWL. And that, so if you look up Order of the White Lion, it's the highest degree of knighthood bestowed upon a foreigner by the King of Bohemia.
You mean the King of Bohemia in Germany?
Yeah, in Czech Republic or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. That Bohemia. That was the highest order. And
yeah,
where
it's
did
the
that
order
phrase,
of the White Lion.
Well, where did that phrase come up?
Someone called in. They're talking about the owls not what they seem. And they're like, OWL could stand for Order of the White Lion. And they talked about that. And so then Bohemia, right? And then the Bohemian Grove, they have the OWL. Right.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Jay pointed that out. Okay, so it says about Twin Peaks.
But then what else? Is the atom bomb was planned out at the Bohemian Grove.
Apparently. Yeah, another cover story. But look at this. Twin Peaks is directed by David Lynch and written by Lynch and Robert Engels, not by Frost. So you're right. I don't think Frost had anything to do with Firewalk with Me.
Yeah.
Yeah, the prequel, the TV series Twin Peaks, created by Mark Frost and Lynch, were the executive producers. Yeah, I guess. So what does that mean if Frost is not in Firewalk with Me?
Oh, well, I was saying, because you were saying that maybe Lynch talked to the Evergreens, and I was saying, well, probably Frost, because he seems to be more into... Man,
well, no, Lynch is... could know it all, knows all that stuff, too, but he knows the extra McLuhan part that Frost may not understand, or eventually he educated Frost. So, and you know, the way Lynch was upset about movies being watched on the cell phone, that was the last straw for him. You know, all that work that goes into making films or even TV shows, and he thought watching on a little screen was really stupid. He aesthetically was appalled by kids doing that.
He's also really angry about high definition.
Oh, is that right? Why?
Because it would ruin movies. It would ruin everything. You'd be able to see the screws and the set.
The screws and the set?
You'd be able to see the screws in the set.
You could see the screw in the set?
Yeah, like in the movie. It wouldn't look like a spaceship. You'd see screws in it.
You're talking about that you can see details that ruin the movie effect?
Yeah. Yeah, it would... It would make the artifice apparent.
Oh, the screws on the set. That's what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay, man, you got it. Okay, so you got to go away. Are you going to come back after work?
Possibly, but I'm going to listen while I work.
Oh, okay. Maybe you could type in messages if you can on the chat line. So... Okay, so what I've taught you now is the Evergreen Bob connection through Blue Rose, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah, no, that's amazing.
Yeah, that Blue Rose is the key word. and they're making this whole issue, and it's the one word the actual State Department would know. Not when you buy the recordings, because they delete that from recordings, but if you actually go in person, which is what the State Department did, or the CIA or somebody, they would hear Blue Rose. So who would they tell that to, and how would that get to Lynch, you know?
Through Frost. Or something.
Through Frost? What'd you just say? Not through Frost. Who in the world told Lynch? So Will has just disconnected. Okay, so now we can unmute Brent. What, you watched Twin Peaks, Brent? We've unmuted you.
Hey, what's up, Bob? I muted myself. My bad.
Yeah, do you watch Twin Peaks?
I just started. I'm on the first episode from the series in the 90s. So do I watch it? Not really.
So you don't know it. Okay, well.
No, not really. But I mean, it seems like a pretty good show.
Oh, no, it's very good. And you're going to eventually realize it's about the chip body experience you went through.
Awesome. It's pretty interesting. I noticed the episodes are, what, around an hour and a half? They're over an hour? Is that what it is?
No, it's TV. They're under an hour. TV can't be over an hour. And back in 1990, they were once a week. I think the first series was only 8 shows in the spring of 1990. And each show was only an hour, unless the opening one, maybe the blockbuster premiere one, was an hour and a half. But regularly,
yeah, I think the opener might be around an hour 30, maybe an hour 20, because that's why I didn't finish it yet. It's like, you know, it's easier to watch a quick 30-minute episode opposed to, I mean, that's like a movie opener, hour and a half.
Yeah, right. So the next 7 episodes will only be an hour, unless the finale is an hour and a half. But most of them are an hour, under an hour, whatever that becomes, 53 minutes technically if you delete commercials or whatever other stuff they have in there. So you know nothing about this. All right. What do you say, Gene?
Well, I'm searching David Lynch in Evergreens. And he does have the evergreen is significant in Twin Peaks. Birds and evergreens.
Really?
Specifically.
Hey, you know what?
Birds.
Hey, Gene, I hadn't thought of that, but there's a lot about the woods. And I think there are evergreens up in the Washington area. And so maybe, he's showing the evergreens through the trees as a symbol for what he's talking about. That's pretty good. So what does it say about the evergreens?
Well, he, let's see here. Granted, the world of the sawmill exists here too, but for those first few seconds, we are in a beautiful natural setting. These two images, birds and evergreens, Douglas firs specifically, play large roles in the visceral image of the show and reveal Lynch's belief that nature holds significant keys to understanding not only the show but the larger world as well.
I just realized the sawing the logs, I forgot, that's what every episode began with, the sawing of the logs in the standard imagery that opens the episodes. In the first
The opening episode that I was watching, the FBI agent makes a big deal about the trees everywhere.
Yeah. That's
the first thing that he's interested in visiting the city.
Oh, when he's driving in the car and he's just arriving.
Right. He's very eager to find out what type of trees they were.
Yeah, he's saying this to Diane on his dictaphone, right? He's saying the smell is incredible, right?
Yeah, that's what I think was going on.
Well, this is obvious. The trees are the opening thing. You got the sawmill. You got the log sawing. Now, you're saying, Gene, that somebody – who's writing this about the trees?
This is in the book, The Philosophy of David Lynch.
Oh, okay.
And edited by William Devlin.
Right. You Googled this?
Yeah, I just Googled David Lynch evergreens, and it came up.
So they do they use the word evergreens in what you read?
Yeah, specifically the Douglas fir. He, it's in the index of this book, Evergreens. And then I managed to get to the pages 179 and 80. But here, later, in another paragraph, Bob, it says, Cooper is first introduced to the audience marveling over the trees. And I think that was the scene you guys described.
Yeah.
The same trees, however, become Lynch's marker for the onset of ominous activities.
Yeah.
Throughout the series, the image of wind swaying the boughs of the Douglas firs alerts viewers to the fact that something mysterious may soon occur.
Yeah. That's actually incredible that if Lynch did have access to the evergreens, knew about it, that's a great way to have non-physical, because all of nature is non-physical, or animals are non-physical, according to Ion. I don't know if trees are non-physical, but a lot of the world out there that people think is real solid nature is actually not physical nature. So it'd be a great symbol for, and of course, you talk to the evergreens, they'll tell you what's coming, and that can make you knowing ahead of time, and that's ominous. Very perfect.
Yeah. It's the power of the image this paragraph is describing.
Yeah, so Ion says the ocean can be a symbol for the guff. The ocean was a basic symbol. So you've got water, wood, you got the waterfalls, and you got stone. So McLuhan used to talk about the poetic symbolism of stone and water, used all through James Joyce. Then you got the tree. Wood is the Chinese part. You got air, fire, and water. What is it? Air, fire, water, and what's the fourth
earth,
thing?
Air, earth.
Air,
fire, and water.
And earth and could be stone. Tree, but the Chinese make tree or wood the fifth element. They got five, and we in the West have four. But there's the basic thing, earth. Tree, fire, water, fire walk with me. You got the basic elements there as a structural ground.
Yeah.
For the interplay of matter and spirit, even though one shouldn't make it so dialectical because they infuse each other.
Cooper also says, there's a quote here. Cooper says, keep your eye on the woods. The woods are wondrous here, but strange. And Glastonbury Grove, the entrance to the Black Lodge lies deep in the forests.
Yeah, yeah. That's a big deal. And then Glastonbury is famous in England. Isn't that part of Stonehenge, the area where the Stonehenge monuments are that Ion makes a lot of? There was a big change at the time of the making of those Stonehenge in human consciousness or evolution or culture, Ion said. So they're significant. So you've got Lynch referring to the role of Stonehenge with the word Glastonbury.
Mm-hmm.
Glastonbury Grove is where the lodge, the portal is in Twin Peaks.
Yeah, and this fits in really nicely with, you guys mentioned earlier, McLuhan's birthday and the Google Doodle and the video you and Roxy put together.
Yeah. And then Worcester dying.
Yes, Worcester died.
Yeah.
Wow.
He died. He couldn't, you see, Ion said a couple of years ago to me privately, the problem with Worcester is he's the last guy holding up the Washington Monument. And it's very accurate about Worcester, even though he was a bohemian, you know, grass smoker and that, he was very responsible as a citizen politically. And he followed the Washington very closely and did some of his magic in relation to it, and he had that 37-hour cycle after 9/11, I think. But so when Trump won, this is according to a person, when I stopped talking to Worcester in March 2013, if you remember, Carol Lopresto picked up on it. She had been talking to Dave in 2012 and worked her way through and became a very good friend by phone for the last 4.5 years. She was the one who did the weird dressing in New York City. Remember her way back there about the time you showed up? She'd report in on the fashion and art scenes in New York City.
Vaguely,
her name was Carol.
Yes.
Yeah, Carol Lopresto. She's the one who emailed me, told me Dave died. And talking to her, she's the witness of what happened to Dave. And apparently Dave got very outraged at Trump because Dave likes the Clintons. And I guess he thought Hillary should win. So he couldn't take the violence he perceived Trump was causing to Washington. And so there's what Ian said, is that Worcester was holding against the obsolete holding up the obsolete monument. And the monument represented, Bill Clinton or something. Or Bill Clinton was a symbol of that establishment, because Worcester was related to the Eisenhowers out in Kansas, so he always felt connected to the elite. And but Trump destroyed his sense of balance, and he raved against people in the hospital. You had to go to the hospital, and then the nursing home. He alienated everybody, and went down with Trump. So he failed to make the transition to Irondom, where he could have relaxed and enjoyed Trump.
Yeah, his little paradise was in his apartment overlooking his view. I just remember him describing
was
pierced by the election.
Yeah, and he got really mad and started bugging everybody, and then decomposed. So here, Will's an expert. I've told him a lot about Olympia, because Will went to Evergreen's College. You know, the State College Evergreens in Olympia, Washington, where Matt Groening, started the Flintstones or whatever they're called, the Simpsons. Will was very interested in the fact that cosmic awareness came out of Olympia, a good chunk of it, and that he went there, and it had the name Evergreens, and the curriculum was influenced by Dave Worcester in the 60s. So there's a whole – that's why Will brought up cosmic awareness, that then reminded me about Worcester, when he was talking 10 minutes ago. He can develop – he basically is looking at a documentary or something to do on my connecting from – pre-cosmic awareness, then cosmic awareness, then the Evergreens, and then Ion. He's interested in that sequence.
Nice.
And he sees the Twin Peaks thing as, echoing that.
So the effect of Worcester and the monument, that's interesting. That's very interesting timing, too. I mean, it's symbolic, but that stone, that's a stone monument in D.C. that was being held up by Worcester. That's what Ion said?
Yeah. He was trying to, keep the old image of America with Washington as an important place and all that it represents. Worcester was aware of the Freemasonic influence in Washington. He had talked about that. And that just came up on my Facebook page today. I laid out what Ion said about the Freemasons. Peter Lamborn Wilson thought that every president was a Freemason. Well, Ion said only 11 were Freemasons, and Gerald Ford was the last one.
You said there were no Freemasons in Texas, and somebody asked you.
Yeah, that's just something that I was just looking through my notes. And, Texas is the most powerful state in terms of the presidency. It has created the most presidents, Ion said. I don't know. I've never checked it out. But Texas is very influential there. And yet I think that's why Ion pointed it out, because he made those statements at two different times. But he said there are no Freemasons coming out of Texas. Nobody of a powerful Freemason presidential level is in Texas. So somehow Texas was influential in Washington, maybe to counter the Masons.
Mm-hmm. Another warring faction.
Yeah. Yeah, the ancient quarrel between North and South, as McLuhan would say. So the North were Freemasons and the South weren't. And if Texas had the majority of presidents in their hand, in their pocket, that would be to counter the North that had the Freemason guys.
Sure. And the warring continues, Bob, at least on the little man level.
No, only in the android meme. All humans, chemical bodies, have given up. They're just wandering around trying to control their coke addiction and their profligate sensory indulgences. That's the way most humans are. Control their diet and their hedonism while they watch the android meme replay the ancient quarrel.